So they're saying in Gangster's Paradise, Coolio catches the essence of the Psalms. Now, we don't think of the Psalms like this. We think of this as a down, you know, gangster song in an urban, in a brutal urban environment, and that the Psalms, of course, are these enshrined, safely kind of behind layers of culture and history, so that we're not in the immediacy of the Psalms. So when Coolio talks about walking into the valley of the shadow of the death, into the gangster's paradise, where the 23-year-old guy doesn't know he's going to make 24, is surrounded by enemies and confusion and all kinds of things. You know, in a very real way, these are the kind of situations that we find recurring all the time in the Book of Psalms. But because the language is in a particular way and is far away in time and history, it's hard for us to get the reality of the situation that's being addressed there. Because in most cases, it's like Gangster's Paradise, the psalmist is surrounded by enemies in perilous circumstances. You get this powerful thing in Coolio, some very brutal images, painful images, and then this refrain of why are we so blind to see the ones we hurt are you and me, where there is this kind of reaching out for something bigger, reaching out for the sense of interconnectedness that we find in Coolio's writing. And in a sense, that's the sort of refrain you find coming up time and time again in the Psalms. And in particular, in the Korite Psalms, which really look at this image of Zion as the city and the hill that is the holy mountain, holy city, holy temple, and holy of holies, that is surrounded by those things that are going to try and undo that. I first really came across the Korite Psalms really when I was 15 and read Dennis Wheatley's book, The Devil Rides Out, which might feel like an unusual beginning point. Well, it's turned out to be a profound spiritual kind of process. But in this very exciting black magic book, which has the white magician, the Comte de Richelieu, kind of dashing around and beating up on the awful black magician Mokarta, who is based upon one Aleister Crowley, he has this Latin phrase that he uses to banish dark forces, which goes fundamenta eos in montibus sanctis, and I loved the sound of that when I was 50. I didn't know what it meant at all, but so I was very fond of, when I was that age, of chanting that out in the darkness and sort of casting out evil. And so it was a real surprise. I mean, actually, some years back. Come down the years a long way. I'm giving, for some reason, I can't remember how I got into this particular thread. Oh, I know, it's Penny's fault. We did Jeremy got me to do a talk about books that had influenced me. So I did a book talking last 2 years ago about books that there was three of us on a panel and everybody else did really respectable kind of esoteric tomes, like somebody did Alice Bailey and somebody else did Nisargatha Maharaj and I decided, it's true. So the books that most influenced me were the collected works of Lobsang Rampa, who was really somebody called Cyril Hoskins, who kind of from Southampton, and Dennis Wheatley's Devil Rides Out. And then I flung in Joan Grant's Winged Pharaoh, which were for good measure, really, but because it was literally true. But anyway, so therefore I ended up rereading. So I reread the Devil Rides Out, and actually found it a much better book than I remembered. But I got again intrigued by this invocation, Fundamenta Eos in Montibus Sanctis. So I looked it up, and then as I looked at it, I realized, oh my God, this is one of the Korite Psalms. This is one of the exorcism Psalms. No wonder I got interested in it, because it begins, Fundamenta Eos in Montibus Sanctis in English means his foundation is in the holy mountain. So what the foundation in Kabbalah is, of course, Yesod. So if we make our foundation in the holy mountain, it means we align our Yesod with that sense of the holy mountain that is the center point, that is the kind of center pole, that is the middle pillar, that is the place that enables the descent of grace and the ascent of prayer. So this, as I really got into this, really, and sort of, and then started to meditate upon this psalm. And one of the things about the book about the psalms is that they're actually very condensed teaching prayers. So as you pay attention to them, they kind of talk back at you. So the sons of Korah, a psalm, a song. His foundation is in the holy mountain. So we begin by creating our foundation in the holy mountain. We're entering into a different aspect of ourselves. We're saying, okay, I'm going to be align myself. If my foundation is in the holy mountain, I am one of those who live inside within the holy mountain. Now, if we look at Judaic tradition, the place after Abraham, one of the great places after Abraham, the development of the tradition is in Mount Sinai, where the tablets of the law are given, where the blessing of God descends. And one of the commentaries on the Sinai's experience is that the Israelites are taken into the holy mountain. And so the connotation of the making a foundation in the holy mountain is you become a dweller in and within the holy mountain. So therefore you make a covenant, the brit, which is the covenant that is made with the divine, which is the covenant that you will serve no other than the living unity, no other than the living presence of the divine. So there is this, in the Quran you find this Allah saying, "Am I not your Lord?" And the souls say, "You are our Lord." Now it's not a sectarian thing, it's not a thing about Islam or Judaism, it's about the divine saying, "Am I not the source of your being?" And the soul responding, "You are the source of my being." Face beholds face. So this whole beginning point of establishing our foundation in the holy mountain is that act of submission, that act of thou art, I am. And the equivalent of thou art and I am is part of that act of submission, that act of inclusion into the holy mountain. And the next phrase that happens here is Yud He Vav He loves the gates of Zion more than all the dwelling places of Jacob. Now, this is a whole place really of inviting the opening of the gates of Zion. Now, the gates of Zion really are, so this is, we having entered the holy mountain, we now address the gates of the city. Now the gates of the city, so in a certain sense, entering the holy mountain is to become centered in Malchut, is to become aligned that our yes or our foundation and the foundation of the mountain are aligned in the right place. The opening of the gates invites the descent of Tiferet, the descent of the deeper energies. And we're also given this name Yud He Vav He to contemplate. So the name that we're given is the name that in Judaism is called the unique name, the name of creation. Its name, it has no real meaning except I create, I am. It's about being and creation. So it's the name that is, in effect, the sanctuary. It is the deepest place. So as we enter that place, we enter that light of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh descends into us, reorientates our internal structure. So that we become one who can hold that light, hold that shape, enable that energy to move through us. And in a certain sense, what's being embodied through Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh is the Shin, is that infinite spirit that is beyond all form, that becomes, that in a certain sense is the point just above the Yud, which becomes the will to be, the will to create through the Yud, that then through the non-dual love of the He, which is also Bina, generates form, generates the child that is the Vav, and the Vav is the letter of transmission that then becomes embodied in the final He. Now, one of the linguistic curiosities about Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh is the letter Yud is if you spell it out, it doesn't repeat itself. So it's Yud-Vav-Dalet if you spell it out in full. If you spell the letter He in Hebrew in full, it's He, He, to the double He. If you spell out the letter Vav in full in Hebrew, it's a double Vav. And of course, the He final is also a double He. So when the books of contemplation talk about, or the Fountain of Wisdom talks about the Yud as the singularity, it is the singular point that then as it comes into form, comes into repetition and multiplication. Because the other three letters of the name multiply. The Yud is always singular, pointing into the superabundant secret darkness. So the opening of the gates of Zion are the opening, having, if you like, established ourselves in a stance that invites our inclusion into being within the mountain, within the light. The opening of the gates then actively invites that light. And this is where it says, glorious things are said of you, city of God, Selah. Immediately having received that light, immediately having, if you like, become a vehicle of those qualities, instantly what is the next thing is perceived. I mention Rahab and Babylon to those who know me. Behold, Philistia, Tyre with Cush, Nubia. So these then are the cities of the plains that are the enemies of Zion. I mean, they're historical enemies of Zion, and these are the great empires that were trying to destroy Israel at that time. But these are the so immediately I come into relationship with the name, with the flow of that light and that energy. Immediately I become the Ophiriad, or the Diakon who holds the light. What I start to perceive is disharmony, is that which is the shadow, the enemy of that light, that which would seek to destroy it. It then goes on to a line that says, this one, this is the speaker, this one is born there. That means born in Zion.
Say that again, sorry.
This one is born there, born in, which means born in Zion. And it goes on to say that of the person that is born in there is Aish v'Aish. Now this is a very particular phrase, Aish v'Aish. It's a repetition, so it's intended to catch our attention. Aish for Aish. Well, I've got it on page 96 in my book. It's in Zion. It said a man and a man was born in her. So a man and a man in Hebrew is Aish for Aish.
Oh, yeah.
In Hebrew, okay. So I've talked about it in the following page.
is, but how do you spell it?
Aish. A-I-S-H. Then V, A-I-S-H. Aish, Aish. Aleph Yud Shin, Vav Aleph Yud Shin.
Okay, you got it.
You got it?
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt your flow.
All right. Yeah,
poem. Song,
in a certain sense, I've looked at some of the dynamics of that in page 127 of the book, really. Where I've looked at the, because the interesting thing about the word, the word for man, Aish, in Hebrew, Aleph Shin means fire. The word for man is Aish, which has the letter Yud in the middle of it. So, a true human being is the fiery being that contains the seed of the divine will within it. Aish for Aish, which is a doubling of the person, is really looks at the conjunction between the outer part of ourselves and our presence in Tiferet. The letter Vav is the letter of conjunction, very much associated with Tiferet. So the, in a certain sense, the how the Kabbalists would envisage Aish for Aish, there would be the first Aish is the sense of ourselves, the conjunction of Yesod and Malkut, the person that we know we are. Vav is that still point in of presence in Tiferet, present in the heart. But the deeper Aish is our image, our divine image, the image of who we can be, who we most deeply are. So Aish va Aish, when we are Aish va Aish, the, if you like, the lower part of ourselves, the outer part of ourselves, aligns with the deeper part of ourselves. And in that moment, we are born out of Zion, out of the holy sanctuary, out of the holy city. We are the dweller on the mountain who reflects all the layers, who holds the light and works with the shadow. And what happened from and with this phrase Selah is a shout of prayer. You could hear it in this thing, Selah, Selah. It's let it be, let it be so, let it be so. It is so, right? It's that kind of. It is like this, Selah.
So that's how we embody the kind of archetypal qualities, and yet it comes uniquely through us.
Completely that,
coming
yeah.
Together.
So coming together, totally. Yes.
If you're a therapist, you're your own, the therapist that you are.
You are, yes, you're specifically who you are, but you're embodying that deeper kind of quality just as yourself, through your own nature, through your own body, through your own personality, through your own shaping.
And then it becomes one in that moment.
And they become one in that moment, that moment of alignment, yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yeah,
exactly that. It comes all the way through.
And then it says that's the communion with the angel of Tiferet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more than the communion of the Tiferet, because it's actually the angel of Tiferet is drawing on the deeper image of ourselves in the supernals. Okay, so there we're looking at this. I'm drawing a bit more deeply on this teaching right now, because it's so the first part of that is the communion with Tiferet, but also that Tiferet draws on that much deeper image of ourselves that exists in Da'at, who is that sometimes called the child in the abyss, the babe in the abyss, who represents that non-dual possibility, really, that constantly seeking to emerge.
So then all three levels of the tree are aligned. They all are.
In that Aish Aish, where the whole thing comes all the way down into action in the Malkut. No, three.
Yeah.
So Aish, Va, Aish, and then down into the body. The fourth level is in the body. Okay, so Aish and Yesod, which would be the world of Yetzirah. So the body, the actual body, and the world is in the world of Atzilut, as in the world of Asiya. Then the first Aish is in Yesod, the world of Asiya. The Vav is in the world of Beria. The higher Aish is in the world of Atzilut. So all four of the Kabbalistic worlds then come together in that moment. And the important thing is the flow, not identifying the levels in a way. So from that place, then that one was born there, Selah, singers as well as dancers, all my springs are in you. So this is really saying all the activities, singing, dancing, the wellspring of life is in you as you align with this. So this is this place of pure spontaneity, of really allowing the life energy to move through you as it will, because you're one born out of Zion, drawing on the wellspring of Zion, drawing from no other place than this. Because you're Aish for Aish, born of Zion.
Did I miss the reference to Elion? And he, Elion, established her.
Yeah. Elion is the name for Keter. It's the high god.
Right.
So being established in Elion, a man. So you're right. I didn't actually talk about that verse, because in a sense it is that process of being born in there, being established, that energy coming forward and being established. And from that place, that sense of Yud-Heh Vav-Heh takes account when he writes down people and says, this one was born there, singer and dancers, all my springs are in you. This is another development on. So in that moment we touch it, as we become used to doing that, as we become more deeply aligned with that, we become established in this as a way of our being. As that is established in a way of our being, that deeper part of ourselves, that deeper aspect of the soul, registers that the outer part and the inner part are now indissolubly joined. So then we are. This is the very deep state of awareness and practice. Ramana Maharshi used to speak of this as Sahaja Samadhi. The Samadhi that is always present is always spontaneous, that never goes away. So it's a very high kind of state, really. So to be written down, for Yud-Heh Vav-Heh to write down that you are born of this place, you are established here, my wellspring is in you, singing and dancing. You are a singer and a dancer, who Yud-Heh Vav-Heh, who draws directly on the wellspring and nothing else. Mm-hmm. Right, so this is a very profound state and accomplishment, and pretty much the end of the path. This is the path where really you simply then keep drawing on that wellspring.
Enlightened or whatever.
For sure, enlightened.
Ready to ascend.
Or not, depending on or do whatever.
Or
I mean,
come back
or just stay. Who knows? Right?
That state.
That's right. That state is beyond all our knowing. Right. In that sense, yeah.
Sense, what would you be drawing on if you weren't drawing on the wellspring?
Oh, we draw on all kinds of things. We draw on the wellspring, we also draw on history, knowledge, you draw, you know, that's the point, really. The one who has, in a sense, simplified everything to the extent and let go of everything but that wellspring is living profoundly nakedly in relationship with the divine presence. Whereas what we mostly do is sometimes do that, and then we draw on all kinds of other things to, you know, in order to prop ourselves up, in order to feel okay, in order to manage our lives.
So other parts of the tree
of life. So this is much more direct, where you let go of all of that, you let go of knowing, let go of thinking, loving, whatever. You just are in spontaneous relationship with the divine presence that is coming through in whatever way it's coming through, and you are at the service of that. You know, there's this phrase in the Quran, am I not your Lord? Lord, you are our Lord. that act of submission and allowing ourselves to be shaped by that which moves through us and which shapes ourselves and the world, and having no barrier to that. So that's the, in a way, that's the sort of thing I think of my teacher Tom Olerman, that's really where Tom practiced, really, and it sounds like it would be very dramatic, but in Tom it was very simple, very kind of but very immediate. You'd sit with Tom and your mind would get quiet and your body would get quiet, and Tom didn't really think of himself as a teacher, even, really. He was just inquiring himself in his own inquiry and kind of in his own practice. But that sense of the light coming through the flesh, that is actually quite tangible, and you can really feel that quality with some people where they're just drawing on. So when I was much younger, it used to irritate me, used to forget the names of the Tree of Life, and he would forget them because they were not necessary. They were not essential. I didn't understand. I was too young, too inexperienced to understand that he had assimilated all that and gone well beyond that. So none of that mattered. Mm. And in a way, when you do come across people who are like the rare people who are sort of like this, they have this enormous fluidity and capacity to go right to the heart of things. I mean, there's extraordinary, if you read some of Ramana Maharshi's dialogue sometimes, the extraordinary thing where he's having a conversation with quantum theorists, quantum physicists. This guy has never studied science. When he's 50, I'm not sure he went to school, because when he's 15, he's on the Mount of Arunachala being a sadhu. And so he's having this very kind of complex conversation with quantum physicists. Or he's talking with an Orthodox Jew about the name Ayah Asher Ayah, I am that I am, and relating that to Vedantic tradition. Because he's got nothing in the way. He's listening and allowing whatever needs to come through.
So he doesn't have how does he have the knowledge then, or is he just responding to it from his...
Well, he doesn't have the knowledge until it comes out of his mouth. That's the point. He's not, the knowledge is not in him, because he, in a certain sense, doesn't really exist. He is a fulcrum, a point. So what's happening is a conversation that's happening through him. And he, as far as we can judge when we look at Ramana's dialogues, so there's a great one where somebody's carrying a picture of him away, and he's pointing out to a friend, oh, look, they're carrying Swami away. So they're carrying Ramana away, because he's not Ramana. Mm. Right, he's, oh, that's Ramana over there, that's interesting. He is the point of awareness manifesting. Ramana is somebody else, something else.
So is it like his personality is no longer operating in a way that's leading him? He's still got one, but it's not a thing that's dominating his...
Not at all, yeah, no, this personality is at the service of this deeper kind of presence and sort of... But you're right, still there is a personality. If you think of your teacher as a Gaudata Maharaj, who has this very fierce, fiery kind of personality, it's been a subtle, and the feel you get when you read Ramana and read Nisa Gaudata, it's quite different, because their shapes are different. So again, it isn't that people become a blank nothing. I mean, Tom had a very distinct shape and very distinct presence and opinions, but he held them all kind of loosely, lightly, but it was at the service of something else that enabled that deeper kind of fluidity, a sort of a shape-changing kind of capacity. So when we come to come back to the psalm for a moment, where the Book of Psalms comes from, and where we kind of, and where we come back to Coolio and Gangster's Paradise, is that the psalms are addressing... And so you find it also in the Hebridean psalm, where they're addressing the struggles of life, okay, and the invitation of the divine to enter into that, and the invitation to ourselves also to step into the holy mountain, to step into this sense of kind of communion that enables us, that both supports us and enables us to hold the light in the midst of shadow, in the midst of the valley of shadow, in the midst of the gangster paradise, in the midst of Babylon, to use the Rastafari word, the Rastafarians talk a lot about man, the man and Babylon, right? And the images they're using there really are the images of this world that uses people up, that treats people as commodities, that destroys people for the sake of earning a quick buck. So all of this is Babylon. You know, and